The reading today is from James chapter 4, verse 13 to chapter 5, verse 11, and it's on page 1198 of the Pew Bibles. So from verse 13. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop. And how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy.
Friends, the story is told of a thief whose theft went a little astray. He'd spent weeks casing a particular house in a very wealthy suburb, and when he'd worked out when the owners were away and how the alarm systems, plural, worked, he broke in, got inside the mansion and was working his way through the mansion, room by room, stocking his bag and his truck, and everything was going fine until he walked into one particular room. And as he did, a voice said from on high, Jesus is watching you. It sort of caused him to stop for a moment and think, I thought I took account of all the alarms. This is unusual. He took another step and a voice said, Jesus is watching you. And he torched around to try and find it. And as he did it, lighted on a parrot hanging from a cage. And as he did, the parrot said, with one eye, Jesus is watching you. And he sort of went, phew. And his torch went down and there caught the beady red eyes of a 50 kilo but very silent Rottweiler. And the bird said, sick him, Jesus. Very good to know someone is watching out for you when corruption and evil is afoot. And it's very important to know that Jesus is watching over a world that is riddled with corruption and evil and injustice. All you can do is ask Mary that question, whether it's very good or not. Mary is a Cambodian woman whose daughter Bofa was enticed numerous times to leave the village that she lived in order to go to the port city to earn money and pay away, help the family who was struggling with poverty. Mary resisted these requests from friends and neighbours and the port city for a long time. But eventually, people got into Bofa's head, and Bofa, a 16-year-old girl with a sense of responsibility for her mum, left the village and went to the port city in order to do work. Now, the reason Mary resisted was because she knew that sometimes port city work didn't come didn't produce it fruit it should, and young girls like Bopha would be forced into prostitution. But Bopha left one day unbeknownst to her mum. And Mary was somewhat broken-hearted as she tried to in vain to look for her daughter. She even went to the local police, and the police said, sure, we'll go looking for her when you pay a bribe. Mary is poor, has no money, and so could not pay the bribe, could not travel to the port city, and was totally devastated at her 16-year-old daughter is now missing. And reports from the port city revealed that she was not there. She was not to be seen anywhere. It wasn't for some weeks that friends coming back to the village said, we've seen Bopha. She's not in the port city. She is hundreds of kilometres away over the border in Thailand. And yep, she has been forced into a brutal brothel where she is serially raped by paying customers. Now, Mary's heart was torn to pieces, as you will understand. And this is a true story. International justice ministries heard of Mary's plight and of Bopha's imprisonment. And so they sprang into action. The local international justice ministry's head, he had been training a special task force of police in Cambodia, and they together travelled across the border into Thailand, rescued not only Bopha but 9 other young women forcibly held in this serial rape, in this brutal brothel. And as a result, the brothel owner, sex traffickers were imprisoned and are imprisoned now. When Mary got news that her daughter had been rescued, she was overwhelmed, and she wrote this letter to the International Justice Ministry saying, when I learned that IJM, International Justice Ministries, and the police had rescued Bopha in Thailand, I felt like I was born again. For days I did not feel like I was walking on land, but floating in the heavens. Bopha is in a good place and receiving good training. I now have hope for my daughter's future. It is good to know someone stronger and bigger and more powerful than you is watching when evil and corruption and injustice is rife in the world in which we live. And it is really important to know that Jesus is watching over the world that is riddled with injustice and corruption and evil, because that makes all the difference. If Jesus wasn't watching, if he wasn't going to do anything, then we would be doomed to a hopeless life and a cruel eternity. But because he is watching, there is life. Because there will come a day when Jesus will establish his kingdom with such clarity and with such force that all the citizens of the kingdom of God will know without a shadow of doubt that there is a God who reigns with justice and righteousness and peace and mercy, and we will have joy because Jesus is watching. We're in a series in James called Stepping Up With, and over the weeks we've looked at stepping up with wisdom, stepping up with integrity, with love, with works, with repentance, and today we look at stepping up with focus, because James wants us to focus our eyes on the Jesus who is watching. We may need to, during the course of this message, reposition our eyes. And if so, please reposition them. Because it's important to know that Jesus is watching. James' intention in his letter, you recall, is to eradicate the gap between belief and behaviour. To destroy the disconnect between hearing the word and doing the word so that we might be mature. And today he says, step up with focus. It all depends on where your eyes are set. Again, if you need to reposition them, then please do, because Jesus is watching, and he will one day expose all evil and all corruption and all injustice and bring it to account, and he will establish his kingdom where justice and righteousness and peace and joy and love and mercy are to be experienced. And so he writes on in James chapter 4, verses 13 through to 5:11, which is where we're looking today. He fundamentally speaks to 2 groups of people. The first group he speaks to are what we might call aspiring business people. And the second group he writes to are those who do not have access to wealth. The first group speaks directly to you and I, because if there was an aspirational area of the world, it's here. Demographers call this part of Sydney where aspirationals live, people like you and I. The second part does not speak directly to us, but it does speak indirectly to us. And so we launch. If you've got your Bible, we're looking at James chapter 4 and verse 13, where James writes, "Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money." He's speaking to a world like ours. In the first century, as the Roman Empire expanded and the wealth of the super rich became accessible to what we might call the aspirants, the aspiring business people, because they could travel on increasingly safe roads, the Roman roads, wealth came to them in a pretty steady flow. Much like today, where we live in a world where what was once only what was once accessible to the super rich is now accessible to us. Wealth is made relatively easy nowadays. So you take a couple of undergraduates who were a little bored with what they were studying at university. They sat down and did some dreaming, and they came up with a thing that we know as Google. It's now worth tens of billions of dollars. Or take another undergraduate who had trouble keeping up with all his friends at campus, and so he sat down and developed a web-based program, a community builder called Facebook. Facebook has so many people in it now, the population of Facebook, if it were a country, would exceed the population of Japan. And it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Money comes a little easier and our lifestyles are better off. Like, just think about your grandparents for a moment. My grandparents lived in places like Gundawindi and Toowoomba, southeast Queensland. If they were to go on a major trip, they might go to the Gold Coast for a holiday. Generally, they spent their time in either Gundawindi or Toowoomba. That was life. It was very difficult and expensive to get to the Gold Coast. Now, if you go to Sydney Airport on any day, you can find the places filled with people with $10 tickets with Tiger, Jetstar, and so on. They're all going to the Gold Coast because travel is so much more accessible. The lifestyle of the rich and famous is far more accessible nowadays than it once was. And as a result of that, you hear conversations, or at least I hear them at weddings, I hear them at church, I hear them in coffee shops. Tomorrow I'm off to London. And after that I will go to Brussels, and then I might drop in at Tavurin, and then I'll fly on to Paris and Rome, and on the way back to Bangkok. And while I'm away, I expect to add 20% to my bottom line. Next week I'm off to Joburg, and then I'll fly to Durban and then Cape Town, and while I'm away I expect to add 30% to my bottom line. On Mondays, the first Monday of the month, I run a lingerie party. This is not men, of course, you understand now speaking. I have a lingerie party on Mondays, the first Monday of the month, and then on the second Tuesday of the month I run a colour thing at my house. And then, God forbid, really, God should forbid this one, on Wednesday nights, I run a Tupperware party. You know, the reason I say that is because they just breeds. You open the drawers and there's more of it. But anyway, I will pay for that later, I know. Just line up. So, and the women who say that will say, finish the line by saying, and I make a tidy little sum on the air, I get some pocket money. Now, James is saying here, those of you who say today or tomorrow I'll go here, there and make money, listen up. Now, let me be very clear here of what James is not saying. James is not saying we shouldn't make money. I've stood here before and said over the years, make money and make lots of it. And then use it for the extension of the kingdom. Make money. And Jesus is for entrepreneurial spirited people. He makes that very clear in Luke 19, where he tells us he expects us to be about business, profitable business. It's just that this business he's speaking about there is the extension of the kingdom. But even more, in Proverbs 31, there is this ideal woman who is lauded for, in part, her ability to be entrepreneurial and make money. So the Bible is not against making money. And James is not against making money here. What he is dealing with, to be very clear, is the arrogance that often goes with making money. Look at verse 16 where he says, "As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil." The Greeks would call this boasting and bragging hubris. It is ugly pride. It is hubris. That is what James is talking about here. You see, what happens is, I think, when we start making money, our hearts are full of gratitude to God. And after a while, the gratitude slides into thankfulness. We thank God. And then thankfulness slides into an occasional acknowledgement that God had something to do with it. And then finally it becomes, I'm going to London and Paris and I'm going to make money and add to my bottom line. I am master of my own universe. And that is hubris. That is boastful arrogance. It is pride with a capital P. And sometimes the conversations about masters of the universe become quite comical. I was sitting at a wedding once, at the reception, just after marrying a couple. I got invited to the reception and sat the table down the back with people. And the conversation was really interesting. It went something like this. Of course, you know, I've been to London, and then after that we sailed down the Danube, and then while we were in Paris we did this, and then we went over to here and we did that. And the person responded, not to be outdone. Of course, well, when you were in London, did you go to Harrods? Because we went to Harrods. And while we were in Paris, we went to this little coffee shop. Did you go to that coffee shop? And then when we went to, on that same trip, we went down the Nile. Did you go down the White or the Blue Nile? We went down both. And I'm thinking, what? Like, hello, I just married, I'm the minister. And that make no, they were just boastful, arrogant, pride, hubris conversations. I am master of my universe, and my universe is a little more powerful than yours. That's how the conversation went. James says, all such boasting is evil. It's evil. Now, we think of it as badges of honour, at least our society does, but James says, no, no, it's evil. And the reason it's evil is because it comes from a doubting heart. You remember in James, doubt here doesn't mean intellectual doubt. It means experiential doubt. It means that I don't trust Jesus enough to provide my needs, and so I have to go out and do this for myself. Jesus is not doing a good enough job in my life, so I will control my universe myself. And that is so opposed to Jesus. It is a heart with corruption and injustice in it. Because if you're looking out for number one, by definition, you cannot be looking out for anybody else. And James says, it is evil. We cannot control our lives, James says. Have a look at verse 14. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while, then vanishes. Before I finish speaking, you could have a heart attack and die. Before you, lunchtime today, an aneurysm might explode in your brain and you will drop dead. You may leave this property this morning and a trailer, semi-trailer may run into your car, killing you and all in your car. You have no control over your life. You are a mist. I am a mist that appears in the morning and disappears by mid-morning sun. Or to look at it another way, this morning I figured I got 25, maybe 30 laps left in me. 25, 30 laps around the sun and my time is over. I'm more than halfway through. I've done 50. Who knows when my last lap will be? I have no control over it. And so James says, rather than being arrogant, instead, verse 15, he says, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and we will do this or that. If it is the Lord's will. Now, it's one of the things that I've been doing for the last 30-odd years. It's just every now and then I'll say in a sentence, God willing, I will. Or in an email, God willing, Lord willing, I will. Make my plans, but hey, God may have other plans. Lord willing, God willing. In another piety time, people would write letters and sign them with their name and then put DV. D for Donald, V for Victor, at the end of it. DV, which is shorthand for the Latin Deo Volenti, which means Lord willing. So people in the Christian world in the 1900s would always say, the Lord willing, the Lord willing, the Lord willing. And I'd encourage you to do the same thing. Not robotically, But every now and then to remind yourself, I am but a mist. God is in control. I am not the master of my universe. So the Lord willing, I'll make money. Lord willing. And it doesn't have to be with those words. You know, when I was in Nairobi, people would drive me places because you don't really want to drive in Nairobi, let me tell you. It's an experience. I've done it once and I've done that. So people would pick me up. One day, a young man picked me up in a car that wasn't his own, so he's not used to driving it, and he got in, turned the engine on, and then he bowed his head and prayed. And I thought, I haven't seen this for decades, where people pray before they drive. And I thought it was just a quaint, pious thing that you would do. So I bowed my head, and Kenyans always pray long prayers. It's not, God, let's get on with it. It's like, we praise you for this, we thank you for that. And I pray, and he prays for every possible nook and cranny, turn and possibility that could happen on the roads. That this wouldn't happen and that wouldn't happen. I'd be alert, they'd be alert. And it went on and on. And finally he said, amen. I went, amen. And then we took off. And then we drove some 10 or 20 kilometres down a red dirt road, much like the outback roads in Queensland. So, lots of ruts in them, big, massive potholes and loose dirt on the top. Now, we're driving down there. And as we're doing that, his prayer comes to mind because the car started to... This is not a car that he's used to driving, okay? It's a big four-wheel drive, high centre of gravity as far as I was concerned, because it started to drift as he was driving. Did he slow up? No. I think he had to be travelling at least 80 kilometres an hour down this dirt road like this, and we're just going all over the place, and I'm saying, God, I hope you answer his prayer because we're not in control here. And it started to get that drift up, and it got the drift up that you get just before you roll a car. How do I know that? Because I've driven at 80 kilometres an hour down a dirt road like that and rolled. So I'm, God, we're going to go. But his prayer, God's in control, not me. And I thought, that is very clear. So I'd encourage you to pray. Do whatever it takes to remind yourself that God is in control and not you. And then James says in verse 17, anyone who knows the good that he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. So now you know, do it. Remind yourself that the Lord is in control and not you, and live under God's rule because Jesus is watching and he will bring to account all injustice, corruption and evil as he establishes his kingdom. And then James goes on in chapter 5 now to speak to the second group of people, those who have no access to any wealth. And he says, now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted, your moths have eaten your clothes, your gold and silver are corroded, their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look. The wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Now, at first, we might think that James is having a full frontal attack on people like you and me. That's what we might think at first. But this is not so. This is what's technically called a prophetic lament. The prophets often would do it. They would stand in the congregations of God's people, they'd point over the boundary and say, those Egyptians over there, you guys, God is going to come, he's going to put a hook in your mouth, he's going to lead you by the nose, he's going to bring this upon you because you're arrogant and full of yourself, and bang, 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 and you will get it because God is watching. And God's people in the Old Testament would be going, yes, the Egyptians are going to get it. So James is doing that sort of prophetic lament. He's looking beyond the boundaries of the congregation and saying, look, those, when the Bible here says you rich people, it's the corrupt rich people. You corrupt rich people. You. He doesn't expect them to be listening, but he expects the congregation to be listening, that they might be comforted and encouraged, because God is going to deal with the corrupt rich people one day soon. You remember Aaron Brockovich? Remember that movie that came out? Okay, it's a true story, you know that, don't you? About a sassy, ill-dressed woman, no education, could take on a major corporation in the United States in a town called Hinckley and win. You remember that story? It's all true. And she won, to that point in time, the most significant amount of money ever given in a court case like that anywhere on the planet, $333 million she won for the people of Hinckley. Do you remember how the people of Hinckley responded in the movie? with such gratefulness that someone had come in and someone had been watching and someone had brought justice. Remember that? You know that now whenever Aaron Brockovich goes, the people who are victims feel like a saviour has ridden into town. Do you remember when she came to Australia a year or two ago for the asbestos stuff? Do you remember that? Do you remember what the asbestos victims and their families did? They celebrated because someone who is watching and is more powerful has finally come and she will kick butt. Way to go, Aaron. This is the Aaron Brockovich passage of the New Testament. Jesus is watching and he will come and he will turn the tables. He will one day expose corruption and evil and injustice as he establishes his kingdom, and the poor people of the world who have no access to wealth will cheer and carry on, because this text really is for the 80% of the world who live in cardboard boxes that lean up against fences that separate their shanty towns from the five-star resorts in places like Jakarta, Mexico, Joburg, South Africa, Nairobi and Outback Australia. This is for workers who work for less than a dollar a day for multinationals making sports shoes that we buy at the towers for $300 a pair. They hear that Jesus is watching, and one day the rich are going to get it. One day they're going to get it. And James says these rich people, these corrupt rich people, the focus of attention because they've misused the wealth that they've had access to on three grounds. They've been hoarding, they lived a life of luxury, and they're self-indulgent. In verses 1 to 3, he talks about how they've hoarded their gold and their silver and their clothes. There were people who, not unlike Sydney, where a growth industry is self-storage, because our McMansions with smaller families can't contain all the stuff that we hoard. So we have to hoard it in other places that we pay people good money for. So it's hoarded there. And again, it comes from an evil heart that says, I can't trust that Jesus will provide me for tomorrow, so I have to hoard this stuff. The great theologian Augustine once said, the bread in your cupboard is for the hungry. The coat in your wardrobe that you do not wear is for the naked. The shoes that you hold on to that you do not wear are for the shoeless. And the gold you hoard is for the needy. See, God has given us access to wealth not to impress ourselves, not to indulge ourselves, but to care. Now, this doesn't mean that we should sell up everything and move to another part of the world. This doesn't mean that at all. The question is, where is our focus? Is it on self or is it on Jesus, who is watching evil and corruption and injustice? The problem also is that these corrupt people lived in a life of luxury and self-indulgence while injustice was being done. Workers were not being paid. The poor were not being fed. Remember what it was like when the news of the CEOs hit our newspapers and so on a year or two ago? They were walking away with multi-million dollar payouts for ruining companies. You remember that? Our response was, that is not right. And it wasn't. That is what James is getting at here. People making lots of money, indulging themselves. And this self-indulgence, he's saying, fattening yourself up for the day of slaughter. It's not a polite piece of imagery, is it? I'm reminded of when Sizzler used to be a major food chain here. One day, Rob and I were having lunch, and there were some teenage boys there doing what teenage boys do. You pay your all-you-can-eat fee at the dessert bar, and they sat down and started. And they took those little bowls that you could put soft-serve ice cream in, the little bowls, because the owners thought little meant that you couldn't put much in. But no, teenage boys have worked out that soft-serve ice cream, if you do it properly, can pile up to this high. And so they would do that and walk very carefully back to their table, sit down, and these two boys had a competition. How much ice cream and stuff could you eat? And so I watched them for about a half an hour while they consumed 13 stacks each of this. Now, when you've done that, even if you are a teenage boy, what you've done is you've fattened yourself for slaughter. All you can do is go outside, sit down and belch. You can do nothing else. The corrupt rich who indulge themselves are fattening themselves for the day of slaughter, the last day when Jesus will unleash a final, unstoppable moment of his wrath. Now, some may say, Jesus, you're trying to scare me here. You're trying to make me feel awful and bad. No, I'm trying to protect your backside. Here's a true story. In South Africa, there is a game park where the river comes that is so crystal clear, you can see everything without hindrance whatsoever. And the game park caretakers have put a huge plate glass window at one end of a pool that forms from this river. It's like going to the Sydney Aquarium where you go downstairs and you look through a massive plate glass window and see all the fish. Well, in South Africa, you can see through the plate glass window and see hippos and crocodiles and fish and bird life floating around. You can also, at this game park, at the same pool, walk up and there's a little sandy beach to sort of look at. And there are signs up, careful crocodiles. One day, a woman from the United Kingdom was visiting this game park with her toddler. It was a stinking hot day. So they went up to the little sandy beach after looking through the glass and so on, and she let the toddler take her shoes off because it was hot and to paddle around in the water. The rangers said, excuse me, ma'am, this is dangerous. Would you please pull your toddler out of the water? And the United Kingdom woman was just irritated. Said, no, I'm not going to do that. Why would I listen to you? Who are you? Well, I'm a ranger, ma'am, and this is dangerous. There are crocodiles here, and you really should come back for your own safety. I'm not doing nothing. I don't care what you say. And she got really irritated, looked the ranger up, and the ranger said, okay. Splashing around the water, the woman turned around to grab a camera out of a bag to take happy snaps, heard some more splashing, turned around. No child. The people watching through the plate glass window could see every moment of the tragedy unfolding before their eyes. Now, was the ranger trying to scare the woman? No. He was just trying to help her enjoy life. At least two lessons to learn here. We ought not to envy the wealthy, their fortunes, or their luxurious lifestyle, because their focus is on earth, not on heaven. And they're fattening themselves for the day of slaughter. Secondly, because we know Jesus is watching and he will establish his kingdom, we ought to be patient, which is what James says. Verse 7, be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. Be patient. God will provide. Be patient. If you doubt it, look at the prophets and look at Job. Be patient and wait. Given that James, all that James speaks of here, I want to say this to us. We are not the poor. We have access to wealth beyond our grandparents' wildest dreams. We are the rich, or at least the aspirationals. We may need to revisit our position not only before Jesus, but before 80% of the world's population to ensure that we are not fattening ourselves for slaughter. So, how do you use the money you have access to? How many shoes do you have in your wardrobe that you have not worn that belong to the shoeless? How many coats do you have that you have not worn for a year that belong to the naked? And what are the special... We don't have to go overseas to see where we could benefit people. What are the special needs families in our area? Does your standard of living and lifestyle rob you of the opportunity to be like Jesus and therefore be generous? Could you, would you forego a family pizza meal a week that we might reach out to those who we can't currently reach out to? Would you use whatever expertise you have to benefit the poor? I met a man called Patrick who's doing a DBA, a Doctorate of Business Administration, trying to turn his enormous intellect into such a way that the poor in Nairobi can buy affordable houses. There are moments when I see the gap between belief and behaviour so reduced, I feel like I stand on holy ground. I had this experience last week when I had dinner with a young woman called Jerusa, one of three university graduates. Or she's not a graduate yet, she's still studying. Jerusha comes from a very poor area outside of Nairobi as a compassion child and is still being sponsored by Compassion. She is the second born of three. She is the only one in her family to have finished high school and is now at university. And as we asked her what it was like growing up, she said, you know, when I got a new pair of shoes from Compassion, I would wear them Mondays and my sister would wear them Tuesdays and my brother would wear them Wednesdays. And every year I get a new school uniform and I'd give my old one to my sister. And when I finished high school, the school that I was educated at employed me to teach children. And so I did that and I used all of my money to begin the education of my older sister and my younger brother. And now I'm at university and all the money I earn goes into completing my older sister and my younger brother's education because that would be good for them. And if you were to ask Jerusha, why do you do that? She would say, because the Lord is full of compassion and mercy. I just want to be like him. Jesus is watching to expose corruption and evil and injustice. And he will establish his kingdom. And we will be beneficiaries. But will we live without reference to Jesus, or will we reposition our eyes to see him, to focus? Will we leverage what's placed in our hands that we might be like Jesus? It all depends on where you focus. For me and mine, our eyes are on Jesus, that we might be like him. And I'm kind of glad because James says in chapter 5, verse 11, the Lord is full of compassion and mercy.